This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov. Yesterday I mentioned the fact that Prime Minister Netanyahu had been interviewed by 60 Minutes, and I've had a chance now to watch the interview. And I think it's mostly about what wasn't said rather than what was said in the interview. Interesting that he was being pushed to acknowledge that Israel had in fact influenced the United States to embark upon this war against Iran with certain intelligence promises, even assurances. I don't know how you want to put it, because I don't think there are any promises or assurances that can be given in a war. And that was what the Prime Minister said, that, you know, whenever going into a war like this, there are always uncertainties, and even if you present very convincing evidence of what direction the war is likely to take, inevitably there will always be uncertainties associated with it. But there certainly are more than a few rumors floating around that the head of the Mossad was on the call with President Trump to convince him that regime change was effectively within our hands, that it could be achieved relatively easily with a gentle push, not quite gentle, but certainly embarking on a military operation, something that we now know hasn't taken place. And one wonders whether that is still on the agenda and something that is being pursued without being promised publicly. But certainly lots of underlying accusations that Israel was the one who pushed the US to embark upon this operation, and that whatever Israel had said would happen really hasn't happened. We can all draw our conclusions from, you know, whatever was said and indeed what wasn't said. But the thing for me that really stuck out was how convinced the Prime Minister is that Israel needs to wean itself from the financial aid, particularly the military financial aid that the United States gives to Israel. And he claims that they've already started, he's already instructed a program to begin, which will effectively wean Israel off the US military aid, and that over a period of 10 years, we will ultimately be able to achieve being entirely independent and not having to rely upon or call upon the US to help in any meaningful way in the war effort. Having said all of that, I don't think that wars can be conducted at all these days where a country is entirely independent for everything that they need in the war. I think ultimately that there is always aid, whether it be financial or whether it be military equipment or whether it be diplomatic aid in the support of the war effort. I don't think that there is a war that one can really conduct these days without having friends around the world to support you.
No, I tend to agree. It's absolutely impossible. So let's talk about what is happening, because President Trump is reportedly seriously considering going back to active or kinetic war with Iran after a failure to come to an agreement. What's expected next?
Yeah, I love this word, kinetic
war. I've started using it. It's actually very useful.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Howard, that kinetic war means that they don't intend to have boots on the ground, that this will be conducted from a distance rather than an invasion of some sort. I still think, by the way, that regime change is something which is being pursued and which ultimately is an objective, even though it's not being publicly stated. But we've clearly reached an impasse, and a few things have happened on the ground, information that have come out, which also contributes to the situation. First of all, the fact that a US nuclear submarine has apparently passed through the Straits of Gibraltar it wasn't hidden away under the sea. It was very much on the surface for everybody to see. Some of the sailors were walking on top of the submarine as it passed through the Straits of Gibraltar in plain view, and clearly on its way towards the Middle East. When one sends a nuclear submarine, which apparently has on board nuclear-tipped warheads and could potentially be used, then that is quite a statement, especially when it's being done on the surface and not under the sea, which is really where I think submarines mostly belong and operate. So this is, I think, a clear statement and something of a threat, even though I'm not sure that nuclear weapons are going to be used in this war at all. But it's clearly something of a threat. And it kind of piles up the various threats that have already been issued by the US administration against Iran. The other little interesting snippet that came out was Pakistan's involvement, and the fact that there was a report from the US saying that Pakistan had apparently hidden some Iranian airplanes at an airbase in Pakistan in order to help Iran protect their safety so that they wouldn't be destroyed in the war. Pakistan, of course, coming out saying, no, we are independent adjudicators. We are helping to try from both sides to reach an agreement. We haven't taken any sides. The airplanes that you're talking about were aircraft that were used by the negotiating team when they came to Pakistan, although I don't think that they were parked anywhere near Islamabad or anywhere near what might be considered to be useful or appropriate or relevant to the negotiating team. So the question is whether Pakistan is indeed acting as an independent in this attempt to try to reach an agreement. But we have an impasse right now, and the US is saying, threatening, that they will embark upon another attempt to free ships that are trapped in the Straits of Hormuz and potentially even do more than that to somehow progress this. I don't know where all of this goes, because my impression up until now is that the US side has almost been wanting to reach an agreement at any price in order not to prosecute any further the conflict. I'm not sure that Israel is ready right now to continue the so-called kinetic war to activate its air force to continue attacks against Iran. I have little doubt that targets have been identified. But really right now, as far as I can tell, there are two main objectives. Objective number one is to get the hands on the enriched uranium. Prime Minister Netanyahu referred to that in his interview with 60 Minutes, and he said, we can do it. It can, you know, it would be better to do it as part of an agreement where it's handed over. But if we need to conduct a military operation, it is possible. I don't know how that would turn out. That would certainly be something very fascinating. And the other thing is actual regime change. We don't want that regime to be there any longer. And I think it's turning out to be a lot more difficult to push this regime over the edge, over the cliff, than was originally anticipated. So with those two objectives in mind, where does this go from here? I have really no idea. I hope that someone's got some really clever ideas as to how they can do all of that very quickly and actually achieve those objectives. But I think that it's much, much more difficult than we think.
Certainly seems that way. The Knesset has introduced a law to establish a special military tribunal to prosecute terrorists who were involved in the 7th of October massacres that include the death penalty. How is this being received?
Well, what's interesting for me is that yesterday when the Knesset passed this law in its second and third readings, that a military tribunal will be set up to sit in Jerusalem and to prosecute terrorists who were involved in October the 7th, it passed with a majority of 93-0. Nobody in the Knesset opposed this law, which means even the opposition, who would probably vote against any little issue just to voice their opposition, the Knesset on this occasion supported the law. I think that in general across Israel, people are supportive of the idea, not only that the terrorists will be brought to trial in a military tribunal, that it will be held in Jerusalem, that it will be made public, that a lot of the parts of the trial and the evidence will be publicly available, maybe even live on the internet, on certain internet channels, to show exactly what's going on, that there will be certain protections given to those who come as witnesses to testify in this tribunal, but perhaps most importantly, that there will be a potential death penalty for those who are found guilty of crimes that were committed on October the 7th. And more than that, those who are not sentenced to death and who might be incarcerated in Israel, the law says that they will not be released under any prisoner exchange in the future, that they will not be available according to the law of the country to be exchanged for swaps, for prisoner swaps, for soldier swaps, whatever you want to call it in the future, because we know that that's always been a thing and a certain deterrent for Israel to imprison terrorists who've been found guilty of actions and then ultimately released. Many of the leaders of Hamas are in exactly that category, where they were imprisoned by Israel, spent many years in prisons, and then were released under prisoner exchanges. Call them what you wish. I don't want to use too sensitive terminology, because of course those who are released, Israelis who are released, are not prisoners and were never found guilty. They were innocent civilians, but let's just call it prisoner release for this particular discussion. So I think that that's very interesting, that the law specifies that anybody who's imprisoned as a result of being found guilty will not be allowed to be released in the future. And I just want listeners to weigh in on this, because the death penalty certainly is controversial. How does it fit with halakha, with Jewish law? How do we feel about it when trying to be faithful to our Jewish roots? Is that something that we are okay with? Do we feel that the crimes that were committed on October the 7th justify it? Let's not forget that the only person who's been executed in Israel to date is, of course, Adolf Eichmann, who was found guilty of war crimes arising from the Shoah. And that was a highly, highly publicized case, famous case. So do we feel that it's now the right time to reinstate the death penalty for people found guilty of October the 7th crimes? I think yes.
I don't want to let you go without discussing this, because I think this is as important. Well, whatever, I don't know if it is, but it feels it. Israel's participation in Eurovision begins tonight. A number of countries are boycotting the event due to Israel's participation. What are Israel's chances of success?
Well, if we go according to the official betting, then Israel is sixth favorite to win the Eurovision. Noam Betan will be singing Michelle in the semifinals, which will be broadcast tonight from the Eurovision. Those who get through the semifinals will go to the grand final over the weekend. Hopefully, Mukuni's had a chance to allow listeners to listen to Michelle. And of course, Noam, who comes from my home city of Ranana and is formerly a French immigrant to Israel, has represented Israel very well. It's not been easy for him. But tonight in Vienna, Israel will go up against a number of other countries for a place in the grand final. And yeah, it's been very, very controversial. So many countries have already withdrawn their participation, including the Netherlands and Ireland and Iceland and Slovenia and Spain. They all withdrew because Israel is participating. Who would think that a singing competition would come down to this? But kudos to Austria and also to Germany, Austria, the host country, and of course to Germany, who is a very powerful force within the European Broadcasting Union and who really backed Israel's participation, really came out and really supported Israel's participation when moments came. There was a vote that had to be taken that looked like it might well result in Israel being excluded, but not. How important is this for us? I'm not sure. I don't know, but it's nice that we're there, and I hope that Noam and the team do well tonight and, of course, hopefully in the grand final over the weekend.
That is where we leave it, Anthony Reich. Thank you. As always, it is 8 o'clock. Catch Anthony tomorrow morning, 7:45, for the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.